us tonight. Thank you so much for being here. Well, tonight, in the spirit of an old Sesame Street program, the sermon is brought to you by the word exemplify. How about that? Not a word that we use a lot, but a word that certainly has biblical connotation. And something that I'd like in the sermon tonight to sort of have us burn on our brains and learn to use as a reminder of how we are to be living our lives. We are examples all of the time. Whether we intend to be or not, we're examples of something. And we need to be thinking about, day by day, moment by moment, as we're living in the presence of others, what it is that we are exemplifying. And so what I'd like to do as maybe a consequence or result of the lesson tonight, by the time we get to the end of this, is have us all begin to, as we go about our daily lives, and just have this little reminder in our heads once in a while when we're, you know, in front of others and we're dealing with a situation, how am I going to act here? What am I going to do? And this little word pops in our head. What's the word? Exemplify. Exemplify. We want to exemplify. What does it mean to exemplify? To exemplify is to illustrate by example. That's part of a dictionary definition. Or to serve as an example of. Or to clarify by giving an example of. So to exemplify is just to be an example. To be an example. And hopefully we understand that as Christians, we're to be examples of what Christ wants us to show the world about Him. We're to follow Jesus. Jesus left us examples. He was our perfect example. So in John chapter 13 and verse 15, you know, when He washes the disciples' feet and He's teaching them about serving one another, He says, I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Jesus didn't just tell the disciples what to do. He just didn't stand for what was true. He showed them what was true, and specifically in that example, He did that. In 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21, Peter says, for to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in His steps. Jesus was an example of living a life without sin. He was an example of obedience in the face of suffering, in the face of pain and difficulty. He left us those examples that we should follow in His steps. That's the point Peter makes in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21. So nothing then, if you think about it, nothing could be more fundamentally obvious than the fact that those who follow Christ are also to set good examples. Again, just think about it a second, right? Jesus was always setting good examples. We are to follow Christ. That means what? That we are to always be setting good examples. And I won't ask you to say it out loud, but what's the word? Exemplify. We are always to exemplify Christ in our lives. So I'm just going to go through some things that we know about, but maybe we don't think about day by day often enough. These are relationships and situations where I'd like to train myself for this word to pop into my mind. As, for instance, I'm living in the world. And the world is watching me, whether I'm aware of it or not. You can't go anywhere or do anything. That the world, somebody in the world's not watching you. I'm to exemplify. I'm to show the world what good works are. Matthew 5 and verse 16. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who's in heaven. We sang the song, you are the light of the world. In 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 12, Peter says, have your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that is the people of the world, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works which they observe glorify God in the day of visitation. You know, it's easy for people in the world to talk about Christians and to run down Christians. We see that all the time in the media, in social media and all of that. You know what I really think the problem is about that though, honestly? Is that a lot of people who are in the world, a lot of people who make these snide comments on social media haven't ever really met a real Christian. haven't really ever met somebody who's living for Jesus, who is exemplifying Jesus in their day-to-day lives. And you know what I would think would happen if they really met an exemplifier of Jesus Christ, if they really knew a true Christian who was living an unhypocritical, pure life before them? You know what I think that would happen? Those people would shut their mouths. And they'd stop talking bad about Christians. And they'd stop assuming that just everybody who's a Christian is a big hypocrite. And that's why we need to exemplify. Peter is telling us in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 12, let your conduct be honorable among the Gentiles. They speak against you as evildoers. They say, have this all kinds of bad stuff to say about you. But you know what? If you'll show them what a real Christian is, when they start to hear the gospel, the day of visitation, when God visits them with the gospel, I think is the implication, they'll have their mouths shut and they'll be ready to hear the gospel. You exemplify. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 21, Paul said, you know, about taking that contribution and making sure everything was on the up and up. About that, he says, we're providing honorable things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but in the sight of all men. Let's exemplify honesty and honorable and noble behavior all of the time. We do that by doing good works and by doing good works in the right way. And we do it by giving up on worldliness. A man whose life was fairly immoral and worldly was urging his sister to go and hear the preacher, you know, where he went to church. Go, let's go hear this guy preach. He's a great preacher. And his sister answered, I don't want to go. You're not any better for hearing him preach, so why would I go? Hypocrisy and worldliness among people who are supposed to be Christians is one of the greatest hindrances to the cause of the gospel. All of us are, I think, pretty much aware of that. I've mentioned this many times, but I don't know how many conversations I've had with people. Probably you've had with people too, and you talk to them about the scriptures. You invite them to worship with you here at Eastside or something like that, and they'll say, well, I don't want to go to church. There are so many hypocrites in the church. And it's a huge hindrance to people opening their hearts and their minds to hear the gospel. Part of the problem is there that Christians are not living the pure and holy lives that Jesus has enabled us to live. That we have not put away the worldliness from which we've been saved. In Acts chapter 19, there's a lot of places we could turn in scriptures to think about this, but you can go to Acts chapter 19. Paul's preaching in Ephesus. And I want to tell you something. Paul, everywhere he went with the gospel of Christ, and this is true, I'm sure, of all of the apostles, but they were setting the world on fire. I mean, they were turning the world upside down, as one time was said of them. But in Acts 19 and verse 18, it says, after Paul's preaching, many who had believed came confessing and telling their deeds. That is, all the stuff that they'd done wrong, they were admitting that this was wrong and that was wrong. Also, many of those who had practiced magic brought their books together and burned them in the sight of all, and they counted up the value of them, and it totaled 50,000 pieces of silver. There were people who were changing their lives wholesale, who were getting rid of all of that old worldly stuff that was accepted in the society of the day. All of this paganism and superstition and magic and all of that, that was how people lived back then. These people were burning it to the ground. These people, 50,000 pieces of silver worth of books and you know, black magic or whatever stuff. Getting rid of all of it. They were cleaning that out of their lives. It's a beautiful representation of how when we become Christians, we should die to that old man and we should get that worldliness and immorality in our speech and in our conduct, in our thinking, and in our pleasures. We should get all of that out of our lives. In doing that, we exemplify what a Christian ought to be. William Moses Tidwell said that if we were more affected by the preaching we hear, we could be more effective in bringing people to the Lord. And he's right. Paul will say in Romans 12 and verse 17, repay no one evil for evil, but have regard for good things in the sight of all men. The world, you know, it's a get back at your world. It's a, you do that to me, I'm going to do something worse to you. You insult me, I'm going to insult you. Our political situation today is just a perfect example of how Christians ought not to be along that line. Don't repay people evil for evil. Have thought for good things in the sight of all men. Show people what it means to turn the other cheek, to be like Christ was on the cross when he was reviled. He reviled not again, 1 Peter 2 says. To behave like that. Exemplify. And so the next time somebody gets in your face and says ugly things or does something mean to you, what are you going to think? What are you going to do? First thing I want you to think is exemplify. What would Christ do? What did Christ do? What did he tell us to do in situations like that? Ben Franklin said that nobody preaches better than the ant. You know, the wise man said, go to the ant. Nobody preaches better than the ant, and the ant doesn't say anything. The ant just shows us. In fact, part of the reading tonight was talking about, in Proverbs, was talking about what the ant does, you know. Go to the ant. And ants are good examples of being good examples. We need to exemplify to the world. We need to exemplify in the church. Elders lead by example, not just by example. I believe the scriptures definitely teach that elders are leaders in decision making, that they're guiding the church in a lot of ways as shepherds, that they're overseeing things like how the funds are used and so on and so forth. You say, well, where do you get that? Well, I notice that when a contribution was sent for the poor saints in Jerusalem, it was sent to the hands of the elders, that they were responsible for the oversight of that. So there are a lot of things that elders are responsible for, but one of the things that we see repeatedly in Scripture is that they are to be examples for us, and we're so thankful for them that they are. In 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 1, Peter says, the elders who are among you I exhort, who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion but willingly, not for dishonest gain but eagerly, nor as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. Being examples to the flock. Elders need to exemplify. If elders want certain behaviors in the congregation, they need to show the congregation those behaviors in their lives. And again, I'm thankful for the elders that we have here that are so aware of that and do that so frequently. Hebrews 13 and verse 7. Remember those who rule over you, who have spoken the word of God to you, whose faith follow, considering the outcome of their conduct. As the flock, we should be able to look at the conduct of elders and what they're exemplifying and follow that. In fact, when you look at the qualifications of elders, for instance, those given in Titus chapter 1, and this has been, you know, pointed out many times, it's not novel or new, what I'm about to say, but you look at the qualifications of elders that the Holy Spirit has laid out in Scripture, and for the most part, what you really see, for the most part, are things that all Christians are supposed to be doing. With very few exceptions to that. There may be some family qualifications and a few things like that, but basically, this is, you can read other places where all Christians are supposed to be doing this kind of thing. So we read through these qualifications. Paul writes to Titus in Titus chapter 1 and verse 5, for this reason I left you in Crete, that you should set in order the things that are lacking and appoint elders in every city as I commanded you. If a man is blameless, well, all Christians are supposed to be blameless. The husband of one wife, well, you don't have to be the husband of one wife, but you shouldn't be the husband of more than one. So the husband of one wife, he says, having faithful children, not accused of dissipation or insubordination, a bishop must be blameless as a steward of God, not self-willed, not quick-tempered, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, hospitable, a lover of what is good, sober-minded, just, holy, self-controlled, holding fast the faithful word as he has been taught, that he may be able by sound doctrine both to exhort and to convict those who contradict. So many of those things that are just qualifications of being an elder are things that all of us as Christians should be doing. And a great way to learn to do those things is to look at our elders. They're doing those things. They're exemplifying for us. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, again, you have those qualifications that are listed there, as Paul tells both of these evangelists, by the way, to be involved in the appointing of elders in these congregations that didn't have them. And so in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1, this is a faithful saying that if a man desires the position of a bishop or an overseer, he desires a good work. A bishop must be blameless. Again, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous, one who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. Verse 6, not a novice, so on and so forth. He must have a good testimony, verse 7, from those who are outside. Yes, elders are to exemplify these qualities and characteristics for the most part in the church. And then preachers are to exemplify, practicing what they preach. Paul, of course, was both an apostle and a minister or preacher of the gospel. He says about himself in Philippians 3:17, join in following my example and note those who so walk, even as you have us for a pattern. He's probably talking about the apostles there as apostolic examples, but the principle is they're teaching people things and they're living the things that they're teaching. So look at what we're doing, he says. Says something similar in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 16. I urge you, he says, to imitate me. Do what I'm doing. 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 1. Imitate me just as I imitate Christ. But then he writes to these preachers, these gospel preachers, Timothy and Titus. And he tells Titus in Titus chapter 2 and verse 7. Listen to this. He says, in all things, showing yourself a pattern of good works, in doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility. Preachers need to be practicing what they're preaching. Titus needed to be showing those that he was preaching to the principles that he was preaching. Needed to show those things in his life. Things like good works and integrity and reverence. And Timothy, likewise, Paul tells this preacher Timothy in 1 Timothy 4 and verse 12. He says, let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers. What's he saying? Exemplify. Be an example to the believers in word, in conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity, in all of these things, Timothy. You show the brethren what it is that they're supposed to be doing. He tells them in verse 15 to meditate on these things. Give yourself entirely to them that your progress may be evident to all. Let everybody see that you're progressing in the faith so that they might know how to go and how to live. Someone said long ago that a good example has twice the value of good advice. Maybe more. If you just show somebody how it's done, that beats telling them more than two times, maybe 1,000 times. Just show somebody how it's done. A good example is the best sermon. And then in the church, we need members in the church, Christians working together in gentleness. We've already talked about how all of us as Christians, of course, need to have good works and show those to the world and show those to one another. But I want to look at this point as it relates to exemplifying in the church and being good examples for one another. In Philippians chapter 4 and verse 5, Paul, in that context, is dealing with an issue among the Philippians where a couple of the sisters had gotten crossways. And he's trying to encourage them to get right, and he's trying to encourage the rest of the congregation to help them get right with one another. But as he works out of those exhortations, he says in verse 5, let your gentleness be known to all men. The Lord is at hand. In the church then, as we deal with one another, we work together, sometimes not always having the same initial idea about how something's supposed to be done, having, you know, different ideas about different things as we're all individuals, let's learn to be of the same mind to be of the same judgment. Let's learn, as Paul is exhorting us here, to let our gentleness be known to all men. Besides hypocrisy in the church, I think the second big obstacle to a lot of people being attracted to becoming a part of the Lord's church is they hear about a congregation, or they see a congregation, or they know somebody who's a member of a congregation that's had some huge division. That's, you know, there's been some strife, some knockdown, drag out problem in the congregation. Why in the world would anybody want to be a part of that when people don't know how to get along? People who claim to be Christians don't know how to get along. Let your gentleness, Paul says, let your gentleness be known to all men. Show people, exemplify what it means to get along in the way Christ would have us. And then we need to exemplify in the home. It's a responsibility of parents and of grandparents to show their children and their grandchildren how to live, how to walk, how to behave. Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 7, a righteous man walks in his integrity, and his children are blessed after him. For most fathers, I think the truth is that the day will come when your son or your daughter is going to follow your example instead of your advice. Timothy was somebody who learned from his mom and his grandmother about how to live and how to have faith. They showed him. Paul is thankful when he calls to remembrance the genuine faith that was in Timothy. He says, which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois, your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded is also in you. For sure, children and parents get embarrassed by this. Children follow examples. Children do what they see done so much of the time. Several years ago, this lady took her little boy shopping, and the little boy was really good as they were going shopping. As they were at the checkout, the cashier reaches over and gives the little boy a lollipop, you know, a Tootsie Roll or whatever it was, and says, you know, and the mom says, now, what do you say? What do you say? She gave you that candy. What do you say? And the little boy says, charge it. You know. Boy, they're really good about following our example. Let me give you a couple of statistics here that I think are really important for us. Children who see physical violence between their parents are 6 times more likely to abuse their own spouses after they marry. If those children are also abused by their parents, or also hit upon by their parents, they are 12 times more likely to abuse their spouses. It's all because of what they saw. It's all because of what they experienced. If one parent is a heavy drinker, the child's chances of becoming a heavy drinker increase 2 to 3 times. One study done just a few years ago concluded that children of heavy drinkers were found to drink more frequently, more heavily, and more often than children of parents without alcohol problems. Similar results occurred with children of smokers. Children learn to respect authority from their parents. Some don't learn to respect. But by and large, children will learn to respect authority from their parents. Parents shape their children's feelings of obligation to obey rules, to live up to standards and expectations. The rules that you have in your family are an extension of the rules of society and of the rules of God. And if a child doesn't respect those rules in your home, if they're not taught to respect them, they'll never respect the rules of society or the rules of God. They might not anyway, but they sure won't if they don't see it at home. Our children pay way more attention to what we do than they do to what we say. Training by example is actually easier and faster than training by words. So parents, if you want the easy way to bring your kids up, you need to do it a lot more than you say it. They'll get it. They'll get it. Examples in the home are the strongest influence in a child's life. So, what's the lesson? Remember the word, right? Sermon tonight's brought to you by Exemplify. And the question is, what do I exemplify? And in every moment of every day, what am I exemplifying as a child of God? There's the challenge for us. Take that, will you? Take that with you this week. Think about it as you're living your life before the world, in the church, before your family. What do I exemplify? Maybe somebody here tonight that's not been living as a child of God, not been showing the example they ought to show, and you're aware of that, and you need to make it right. If you want to come, we'll hear your confession and pray with you and for you that God will forgive you and strengthen you. Maybe that there's somebody here tonight that's not a Christian, that's not following Christ at all. Why not give your life to Jesus so that you might follow Him to heaven itself? We'd ask you to come. All the standards and